Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Security in Central Asia. The topic often comes up when discussing security situation in neighboring northern Afghanistan, and situation there could not be worse these days. As such that Afghan towns bordering Central Asia are increasingly turning to a hotbed of militancy. Taliban fighters and, more importantly, Central Asian militants are engaged in fierce battle with the Afghan forces in most part of the bordering areas in Afghanistan. The city of Kunduz is once more under threat by the militants for the third time in 2 years. The question is, as things continue to deteriorate in the Afghan border, what is the security arrangement to guarantee Central Asian borders? What role can collective security treaty organization play? And where does Shanghai Cooperation Organization fall on this subject? And most importantly, what does this mean to Central Asia? On today's Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we hope to find answer to some of these questions. To discuss the subject, I have Dr. David Lewis, a lecturer at the UK's Exeter University's Political Science Department, who has previously served as the International Crisis Group Central Asia Director. He is joining us from Ukraine today. Dr. David, welcome to the Majlis.
Thanks for having me again.
Very nice to have you. Dr. Stephen Blank is joining us from Washington, D.C., who is currently a senior Russia fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council, who was previously professor of national security studies at the Strategic Studies Institute of the U.S. Army War College. Dr. Stephen, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you for inviting me.
Very nice to have you. And Bruce Panier is joining us, who is in Prague today, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. Bruce, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you much.
Very nice to have you. Now, with this, first let's take a look at the actual reasons on why we are coming back to this topic today. And that's obviously because further deteriorating security situation in northern Afghanistan. We on the Majlis keep a close eye on this region, and things are not looking good this year. Bruce, please expand on this. What changed since we visited the region last time on the Majlis?
You know, the problems have been growing over the last 3 years, actually. And I think, you know, the first sign, or certainly a clear sign that this was going to be a long spring and summer, was the fact that even in winter there was fighting going on in most of the northern provinces of Afghanistan that border Central Asia. And even as the spring started, there were districts that were reported by the government, the Taliban, and independent organizations as being either totally or partially under Taliban control. And some of them were actually bordering Turkmenistan or Tajikistan. And even before the Taliban officially announced this spring offensive, there was already attacks going on in these districts. And now we've seen a couple of different sets of maps come out about describing or showing where the Taliban have influence and where they actually are probably in control of the districts. And it's alarming to see that almost all the provinces in northern Afghanistan have, you know, huge patches, including along the borders of Central Asia, that show that they are partially or fully under Taliban control at the moment. And of course, once they announced the start of the spring offensive, we saw what happened in Kunduz province, in Balakshan province. At Balkh, we had the major military attack. That was a little bit prior to the Taliban announcement of the offensive, but that had been previously a relatively more stable province bordering Central Asia. We don't know a lot about what's happening along the border with Turkmenistan, but it's pretty much a far reach from the news agencies, Kabul and places like that. And of course, the Turkmen government don't tell us very much about what's happening, actually anything that's happening along the Afghan border. But yes, it's noticeably worse, and it seems to be getting worse even by the day.
Anything you guys like to add, Steve, David?
It's very interesting. As this is going on, the United States military has been clamoring for more troops to go into Afghanistan, not in order to win, but to force the Taliban to negotiate. They are claiming that the Taliban is the greater threat than ISIS. At the same time, Russia, China, and Pakistan are trying to force Afghanistan's government to negotiate a coalition government with Taliban because Russia has this idea that ISIS is the greater threat. If you listen to what Bruce and you have said up till now, it's very clear that not only is the internal situation deteriorating, but that once again, Afghanistan is being almost figuratively ripped apart by the machinations of foreign powers as well. And this is very dangerous.
David, from your point of view, when I ask that question, think of your previous experience as a ICG Central Asia director. What is contributing to this shifting security change in northern Afghanistan?
Well, of course, the question from a Central Asian perspective is, to what extent is this an internal Afghan security challenge, and to what extent does it pose a threat of cross-border insecurity? And that's always been the challenge, if you like, for Central Asia,
right
through from the 1990s through till today. And in a way, there's always been differing positions on that. To a certain extent, at the moment, we see, as Steve said, a Russian position emerging, which effectively argues that the Taliban, if played right, as it were, may not pose a threat to Central Asia and the former Soviet states, whereas the Islamic State is seen as a much, much greater regional security threat. And I think that position, rightly or wrongly, is one that is quite common across the region. So I think you can see a differentiation emerging now between different militant groups in Afghanistan from the perspective of whether they have a potential impact on Central Asia itself. And that, as Steve suggested, is a clear potential divide between the West and other regional powers. But we'll see whether there might also be scope for U.S.-Russian cooperation in this arena as well.
Bruce, a few questions that I would like to ask in one paragraph. In the past, whenever a major district center, especially in his hometown in northern Afghanistan, would get under threat, the vice president, General Dostum, would move in to the north and drive the militants out. I think his moves become so controversial so that he seems has no more appetite repeating this. Also, last month, Taliban attacked the military base, as you referred to, in the Mazar-e-Sharif. This base was mainly responsible to fight back against the Taliban in northern Afghanistan. And now, following that attack on military base, Taliban are again threatening Kunduz. Do you see all these are coordinated? That's the first question. Second is, now the spring offensive of the Taliban is in full force. The latest UN map, which you also referred to, shows that most Afghan towns and villages bordering Tajikistan and Turkmenistan is either in Taliban's control or under their influence. How do you see things going forward in the bordering areas, and particularly what does this mean to Central Asia, particularly Turkmenistan and Tajikistan?
Well, going forward, of course, this is going to be a problem. You know, you mentioned Dostum. Now, he's the one that's shown up the last couple of summers and led offensives, admittedly, on what was formerly his home turf. So he's been operating in Faryab, Jozjan, those kind of places, real close to Balkh and Mazar-e-Sharif, but not actually going there. It's another story entirely. But his presence there at least was managed to help repel the Taliban and dislodge them from some of the positions they occupy. He's effectively being kept in Kabul at the moment. I don't see, he's got his own problems with the Afghan government, and they would prefer that he stayed in Kabul. So I guess we won't have an offensive led by Dostum anytime soon, unless the situation gets so bad that they feel they have to let him out of what he's really being confined there. So that's not going to happen, which means that, you know, and you mentioned what happened in Balkh. So this has got to be a little bit hard on the morale of the Afghan troops up there, who honestly were already pretty hard pressed anyway. You know, they only have the one division that pretty much covers the whole northern part of Afghanistan. And we've heard guests on this program previously mentioned that they just have to go from one fire to another fire trying to put this out. And so they're stretched thin. And now they've just suffered a major attack, you know, on recruits. So I don't see that there's anything, if the current situation stays the way it is, I don't think the Afghan forces are going to be able to keep any kind of stability in the north at all. Now, that said, there was an interesting point there about the way we're going to see this. Is this going to be looked at by the Central Asian governments as an internal threat? You know, and this is just if the Taliban take, what's the difference if the Taliban take the districts or the Afghan government has control, as long as it stays on the Afghan side of the border? But I would add on that, you know, the Taliban have, of course, their allies, these militant groups that are there. And they've shown, certainly with Al-Qaeda and the attacks at 9/11, but even before that with the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan and Central Asia, that while the Taliban confine their activities to within the Afghan borders, they don't seem to be able to to have total control over their allies that are in Afghanistan and keep them from attacking in other areas of the world. And I think that's got to be something that's really worrying the Central Asian governments now, is that fine, if we just had to deal with the Taliban, that would be one thing. But we know for a fact that they have Central Asian militants who are with them, and they're also in these northern provinces of Afghanistan. And what kind of guarantee can we possibly get that these people won't be allowed or escape and go back to Central Asia to cause some mischief on the north side of the border?
I think, David, you alluded to that earlier. Yes, Taliban has been there, and we face this question whenever we talk about security situation in northern Afghanistan by some analysts who would say that Taliban was there for ages and they were never a threat to Central Asia. Why it has to be considered as such now? So now there are some Central Asians, David. The reason why Central Asian militants are coming together in northern Afghanistan is obviously not that they would like to fight for Taliban to topple the Afghan government.
Yes, I mean, I think from the perspective of Central Asia, I mean, the hope is always in a sense that the aims of the Taliban clearly are internal Afghan aims at the moment. They are to either replace the government or get in a strong enough position to form a very strong part of that government. So in that sense, you might say the security threat is somewhat diminished. But I think the bigger problem is, as you've mentioned, this array of other groups that may be in conflict with the Taliban, or at least have different goals from the Taliban, and particularly various offshoots of groups that are somehow linked to ISIS or forms of Islamic State. And these are much more unpredictable. And I think that's why you see this position emerging in Moscow, which seems to me to be a policy of trying almost to cultivate what they might call a kind of moderate Taliban, a kind of Afghan national Taliban. In fact, that's what some Russian analysts refer to it as, a kind of national, almost liberation movement, if you like, as opposed to a regional stroke global Islamist militant movement, which has much wider threats for the region. And I think trying to make that division is clearly part of what Moscow is doing at the moment in the region. Whether that is an accurate analysis is another question. As Bruce said, in the past, of course, even if the Taliban itself has not been particularly interested in spreading into Central Asia, it's acted as an umbrella force, or if you like, a protector for groups which may well have security designs on Central Asia. It's much more complex than simply seeing the Taliban becoming active and therefore the cross-border threat emerging. But there are all these other aspects which Central Asian states, of course, are very concerned about. But just finally, of course, you know, I might just say that in the past, many of these threats have come from inside Central Asian states, even if in various ways they've found support from inside Afghanistan as well.
Yes.
If I could jump in here, I think you also need to understand that if the Taliban does prevail in Afghanistan, it's not only a potential threat to Central Asia, as David and Bruce have stated, it's also a threat to countries like Pakistan and India, because the terrorists will be emboldened to move back into Pakistan. The ISI will undoubtedly support them against India, and we will have more terrorist attacks inside India directed by Pakistani groups or groups affiliated in one way or another with Taliban in Pakistan, and therefore the entire area will be on fire. So this is not just simply Central Asia.
Right. Earlier you alluded, Steve, the Russian involvement with Afghanistan, especially with the Taliban. Is it helping in any way?
Well, it depends what you mean. I mean, for Russia, obviously, the Russian government believes it's helping. It goes back to 2013. Already in 2013, Russian officials were saying they believed that the United States and NATO would not win in Afghanistan, and they were already beginning to share intelligence with the Taliban. It has gone from sharing intelligence, apparently, to weapons transfers, at least so it's been alleged. Moscow's denied it, but there are other sources that have argued that this is happening. Russia, Pakistan, and China have, quote, peace conference, to which Afghanistan was initially excluded, and now they are trying to bring Afghanistan in order to bring about what they call a government of national reconciliation. Meanwhile, as I said, the American military believes Taliban is the greater enemy in Afghanistan and will not accept something like that, and is calling for more troops. So besides the civil war, you have foreign intervention, and it's foreign intervention that spreads from Central Asia to South Asia. If the Taliban does ultimately win, certainly could be the case, then not only do they have little control over these Central Asian groups, this will be an encouragement to everyone, from ISIS on down, that you can prevail against the West, and it will probably help recruit more people to the terrorist causes inside Central Asia, if not elsewhere as well.
Bruce, things are so, so complicated. It has always been complicated, but it's getting more complicated. Now, what is the tipping point that might change everything in the border or in the region?
Well, clearly, if some of this spilled across the border, then that would be a tipping point. I imagine statements from the Taliban, in so much as you can believe them, have been to the effect that they have no interest in anything in Central Asia, and they don't want to cause any problems to Central Asia. If we look at the way Turkmenistan, the relationship Turkmenistan had with the Taliban in the late 1990s, you can see that there is some precedent to say that possibly they can coexist as neighbors in this, if it comes to that. You know, again, the only problem I got is it only takes a couple of guys from one of these splinter groups from the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, or even some of these people who call themselves the Islamic State that are running around in northern Afghanistan. If they can get across the border and just one act of terror in any of the Central Asian countries, a bombing, a major shooting attack or something like that, it's going to send panic throughout the whole region. And then the game changes immediately. And the Central Asians have to figure out what is going to be their recourse. Are they going to try to repel these attacks? Are they going to try to go after the group or members of the group who are they believe are responsible for crossing the border and carrying out an attack on their soil? There's a lot of questions that are out there that certainly policymakers have to consider very carefully and very quickly also.
And when things like that happen, what's the security guarantees for Central Asia? That's the topic actually we wanted to talk about, and sorry it took me so long to get to that. No, the question is, if things like that happen, what is the arrangements which could help Central Asians in terms of security? Is Collective Security Treaty Organization is an option? Will Shanghai Cooperation Organization be helpful? And what does this their entry mean to Central Asia? We will continue the Majlis discussing this and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Majlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the conversation that today on the Majlis RFRL Central Asia podcast, we are discussing deteriorating security situation in northern Afghanistan and what are the options of Central Asia to deal with this increasing challenge. Discussing the subject with me are Dr. David Lewis, a lecturer at the UK's Exeter University's Political Science Department, who has previously served at the International Crisis Group's Central Asia section. Dr. Stephen Blank is joining us from Washington, D.C., who is currently a senior Russia fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog called Kishlak Owazi, is joining us from Prague. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen, to the Majlis. Bruce, you hinted to, if things got really worse, what the security arrangements, security guarantees is there for Central Asian countries to protect their borders? Maybe we can start with Steve with this question.
Formally speaking, there's the Collective Security Treaty Organization. In practice, that really means the Russian army. However, it's the Russian army on the Tajik border. It's an army, I think, that is not really looking to fight another war in Central Asia. Moscow knows better than most people just how difficult it is to fight in Afghanistan and around it. And I think one of the reasons they are trying to make a deal with the Taliban is because they are afraid they're going to be caught in another war and have to make good the guarantees they have made to all the Central Asian states that they will defend them against the insurgency and terrorism. So if the war spreads into Central Asia, there's no doubt that Central Asian governments will look to the CSTO. They will call upon Moscow to fulfill its guarantees. But I'm not certain that Moscow is able to actually fight, let alone prevail, in a long war against the Taliban in Central Asia, given the conditions under which the Russian government and military are now operating. They're already involved in three wars in the North Caucasus, Ukraine, and Syria. The economy is very constrained. The military spending has had to be cut. And the last thing they need is a fourth protracted war. And this will play very badly at home in terms of Putin's popularity, because it's going to be a protracted campaign. So I'm not altogether certain that the CSTO can live up to its billing.
On the same point, Steve, to continue with you, in the past, the organization did not come for authorities' help in Kyrgyzstan when the country was in turmoil, saying that it is their internal problem. Forget about the Taliban. If Central Asians in Afghanistan poses any threat to Tajikistan, let's say, how will this be any different than the situation in Kyrgyzstan in the past? Because at the end,
it would be different than Kyrgyzstan, because in Kyrgyzstan was an internal ethnic conflict between Kyrgyz and Uzbeks. According to my research, the Russian army was prepared to leave until the Uzbek and Chinese governments made clear that they were opposed to this and would resist it. So they stood down. Formally, the Central Asian government that is at risk would have to appeal to the CSTO, and it would take up the appeal and then make a decision, presumably in this case, Tajikistan. Turkmenistan is not a member. Right. And therefore, if Tajikistan is attacked and feels that its security is at sufficient risk, it will be up to Russia and the other allies to come to their aid. But I'm not altogether certain this is going to happen. There are real question marks about the actual readiness of the CSTO as a military alliance. There are questions about the sustainment capability of the Russian military in Central Asia, as I said. And what's more, I'm not altogether certain the Tajik government is strong enough to fight off an internal challenge, because we know this is an extraordinarily criminalized and corrupt regime. There are scholars who call it a narco-state. If the provocation is large enough, it might unsettle the entire Tajik situation. Right. And then we would really have a major crisis on our hands.
I know, Bruce, you have some questions about this topic. And again, coming back to comparison between the situation in Kyrgyzstan when CSTO refused to take part in that, saying that it's an internal issue. But again, the threat from Afghanistan, the ones we are talking about, it is not from the Taliban. Let's be clear about that. We are not talking about Taliban posing any threat. But again, the Central Asians, that includes citizens of Tajikistan who are based in Afghanistan, if they pose any threat to Central Asia, how this is different than the situation in Kyrgyzstan a few years back?
Well, that is a good question, and I suppose this is it depends on how they're going to spin this. If for some reason they can say that these are citizens of Tajikistan who are causing problems on Tajik soil, then I suppose you could make the argument that this is an internal, as Kyrgyzstan was, this is an internal conflict, and it really doesn't concern the CSTO. Now, if something happened in the group that had caused trouble in Tajikistan claimed that they were from the Islamic State or something, then that would represent something more of an external threat. It would be pretty hard to ignore that if they actually got publicity out and said that we represent this group. And then I think that's really where the problem starts. I agree with Dr. Blank 100% that there's real questions about Russian military capability. Admittedly, anecdotal evidence I have of the 201st Division in which is stationed in Tajikistan suggests that these are not the best soldiers in the Russian army. This is something of a backwater where they send their conscripts who aren't really the crack troops that you see deployed in other places, Syria, for instance, or something. So they would be more of a first-line unit that would absorb the punishment if there was some kind of problem, a severe problem out there. They're not ready to really go on the attack too much. They are backed by formidable war machines, without a doubt, and there's the Khant base in Kyrgyzstan, which can support them too. But within the CSTO, how are you going to convince all the members? You know, it's not just a question of Russia, although Russia is, in effect, the CSTO, but you might get the Kazakhs and the Kyrgyz to go along with this and help Tajikistan out. But let's remember that when the Taliban showed up in 1998, around 1998, and came to the Central Asian borders, it was Uzbekistan, which at the time was a CSTO member, that invoked this and said, we want assurances from the CSTO and we want visible help. And Belarus President Alexander Lukashenko at the time said not one Belarus soldier would be sent to guard the interests of Central Asia. So we already have an example of what can happen if you have a dissenting member who is not interested in actually participating in any kind of military campaign in Central Asia. Armenia is another member. Would they send troops? We don't know. then you end up with something that's really a Central Asia Russian effort, not really the CSTO at all. How are they going to interact? Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, and Russia were part of a peacekeeping battalion that was stationed in Tajikistan during the Civil War. And Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan pulled out well before the Civil War ended. And it was really Uzbekistan and Russia that was the so-called CIS peacekeeping battalion there. So there's a lot of questions about the CSTO itself and what all the members fulfill the commitments that they've signed on to. History suggests no.
Interesting. David, feel free to jump in if you have any comment on that. My other question would be, though, that now we are questioning the CSTO's commitment towards its member state, Tajikistan. And now you have another country, and perhaps that's more vulnerable than Tajikistan if in case things get worse in Afghanistan. That is Turkmenistan. And Turkmenistan is not member of treaty. So what kind of guarantees or what kind of arrangements this country has for a potential situation like that?
Well, I think I would agree with the general consensus that the CSTO doesn't really offer a genuine sort of military capability in the region for this kind of eventuality. I think we have to think through what these scenarios actually look like. For a country like Uzbekistan, for example, it's quite hard to imagine a cross-border force that the Uzbek security services would not be able to deal with.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have to be a large-scale, essentially a large-scale military invasion, which is very unlikely coming out of the existing situation in Afghanistan. Even in countries that are much weaker in military capacity, like Tajikistan, you know, Tajikistan's been very, very cautious about its military relationship with Russia. Obviously, it replaced Russian forces on the border and has strongly resisted any return of Russian border forces to the Tajik-Afghan border. So there's a lot of sensitivity in the region about Russian involvement in Central Asia. And that's certainly the case for Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan, which, of course, Turkmenistan is not a CSTO member. Uzbekistan has also withdrawn. And so these two states are in some ways the key states in the region, particularly Uzbekistan, which is the big, if you like, military power in the region. But each of these states are very concerned about sovereignty. They're not at all keen to see Russian forces coming back. We've seen that in the last 12 to 18 months, where Turkmenistan's been cautiously opening up a little bit to military contacts with Russia, but with clearly strict constraints. I think from a Russian perspective, the kind of nightmare scenario is that if Uzbekistan or Turkmenistan come under pressure, they turn not to Russia for help, but to other countries, maybe even to the West. And I think that, if you look at the region from Russia's perspective, it remains a prism in which Russia is facing the West above all. And so that geopolitical prism means that they're still concerned about Western involvement in the region. So I think the nature of the Russian guarantee to the region is a guarantee, frankly, that neither Turkmenistan nor Uzbekistan are particularly keen on seeing implemented. So both those states are very, very keen to have preventative measures in place to prevent any kind of situation occurring where they have to call on Moscow for help. They see that as a political challenge. So certainly, CSTO is not a real military player as such. It represents Russia's geopolitical strength in the region. But I would downplay a little bit some of these scenarios of major military cross-border activity. Seems to me the real problem is if you get some internal dissension or state collapse in Central Asia, that's when in the past we've had these military security problems emerging.
I would also add that if the Taliban prevails in part or all of Afghanistan, that you have not just the possibility of some sort of cross-border operation, but you will have a major revival or expansion of the narcotics trade out of Afghanistan through Central Asia with the Taliban and these groups participating. And this kind of criminality aligned to Islamic ideology and insurgent kind of violence is subversive of the order inside Central Asia. And it's not the kind of thing that military forces can deal with. So apart from the CSTO and its problematic quality, you have this dimension of the potential security threat to the order that currently exists inside Central Asia. And it's even more difficult in a way to deal with because it is so corrupting of Central Asian governments and institutions.
Right.
Could I just come in on that, Mohammed?
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting point, and I do think the impact on organized crime across the region is really important. I'm not sure that the Taliban coming to power would have an impact on the volumes. I think, we already have extensive trafficking through the region, conducted primarily by groups aligned with the Afghan government and governments in the region, right, security forces in the region. In other words, sort of official organized crime, if you like. But the danger is, of course, that the disruption to those narcotics trafficking routes as a result of conflict in northern Afghanistan could have an impact inside Central Asia itself. So in other words, the conflict over who controls those routes in a way is more destabilizing perhaps than the routes themselves. Obviously, the final result of narcotics trafficking is very negative, but it's the conflict over the routes that tends to be really destabilizing in security terms. So I think that's a really important point. But I'd be surprised, frankly, if a Taliban government in Afghanistan would be able to increase the volumes. I think they're really set by demand and supply in Russia and in the West.
Yeah, the prevailing Taliban as an authority, as a government, is really a distant question. But in case if it happens, really a scary scenario. But just to add into the drug dimension of that, Badghis province become one of the major opium producing province in Afghanistan these days. And guess what? Where is the Badghis? And that borders Turkmenistan. So that is indeed a major issue. But sticking with Turkmenistan, Bruce, so we discussed about the Tajikistan, about possible role of the CSTO in case if Tajikistan gets in trouble with its own citizens based in Afghanistan. So about the Turkmenistan, what are the options for this country as a non-member of CSTO? Do you think Shanghai Cooperation Organization could be an actor in a potential security situation in the region?
Well, of course, in Turkmenistan's case, it's neither a member of the CSTO nor the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. It would be difficult to imagine that they would be able to. Certainly, there's no contract or agreement that would bind either of those organizations to come to Turkmenistan's aid should they need it. This has always been an interesting question. What does Turkmenistan do if it's really hard-pressed and it does need outside help? Who exactly do you turn to? The whole idea of bringing in outside help really means the end of that government in some way. There's so many things they've told their people for years that if it was obvious that foreign forces were coming in, even to help prop that government up, it would just totally discredit, I think, the Turkmen regime in the eyes of its own people. And there's another question, too, about if a group did manage to carry off a terrorist attack in Turkmenistan, how are the people going to react to that? Are they going to, would they rally around the government and look at that as a threat, or would they look at that as a symbol of resistance, the kind of thing that they wish they could do for a long time but were never able to do? You know, it really does come back to the internal dynamics of what happens. I would agree that there's no way that there's going to be a large scale of invasion of across the border into Central Asia. I think the more realistic threat is that small groups will be able to destabilize the situation by coming in there and playing upon the dissatisfaction of the populations in these places. And we know from the past, too, that if there is an attack or something in a Central Asian state, particular state, the government of that state tends to crack down very hard on a huge number of people. They cast a very wide net to get everyone, and they make themselves even more unpopular than they were. So this is one of the things I can see that would contribute to Turkmenistan having problems. I imagine ultimately they would have to call on Russia for help. They're the only ones that would probably come to their aid if they really needed it. But like I said, it's the end of the Turkmen government as we've known it for 25 plus years.
I would add that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization cannot be relied on. It has never claimed to be nor developed the capability to function as a hard security organization. They have certain intelligence capabilities that would be useful, which would probably be at the disposal of members and perhaps even Turkmenistan. But the real problem with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is that the potential victory of the Taliban not only might encourage terrorists to attack Central Asia, it could encourage Uyghurs to launch attacks in China. And as we know, the situation in Xinjiang is very inflammatory. The Chinese government has tried to crack down this year on it. And there have been some signs of growing Chinese interest in projecting military force to the border with Tajikistan and providing military assistance to Central Asian states beyond what has commonly been the case. Now that you have China investing these huge amounts of money in Central Asia as part of its Belt and Road Initiative, or the Silk Road as it used to be called, there are probably voices in Beijing who are saying we're going to have to put our troops out there to defend our investments if the risk becomes great enough, because they don't really count on Central Asians to defend Chinese investments under these circumstances. So this does not only play into Central Asia, it plays in other regions as well.
Right. Unfortunately, we also have to conclude the discussion. But before that, as a final point, so what we are talking about is about the potential security situation in the border or in Central Asia. It is scenario, just a scenario. I just wanted to make that clear. And whether Collective Security Treaty Organization or Shanghai Cooperation Organization plays any role or not, that's yet to be seen. But Russia is already playing a role. Russia is playing a role in a way that with their bases in Tajikistan and using that base as a platform of some sort of engagement, and also engaging the Taliban, whatever excuses they have, they are already there. So what does this mean to Central Asia? Obviously, we are planning a full-fledged event on that, but just get a few points, and with that, we will conclude the discussion. So what does this mean to Central Asia? Maybe, Steve, we can start with you.
Well, I think it means a heightened sense of risk. Because there's always, everybody in Central Asian establishments is always concerned that whatever happens in Afghanistan will not be confined to Afghanistan. And that, as we've discussed, Central Asian militants residing in Afghanistan will take advantage of that situation to incite trouble in Central Asia. So it adds to the risk factors in the region that are there already.
Right. And Bruce and David?
Just briefly, I think the other way to look at it in a way is through this sort of geopolitical prism. CSTO has been a vehicle for Russia to maintain dominance in the region, and any instability will be seen by some Central Asian governments, at least, as almost an opportunity for Russia to increase its military presence in the region. And I think what we've seen over the last 2 to 3 years, certainly been Moscow trying to activate its presence and its influence across the Central Asian area, including in Afghanistan. So I think the geopolitics of this are very important, and perhaps in some ways even more significant perhaps than the direct security implications.
Right. Bruce?
I think it's difficult for the Central Asian governments to look at what's happening in Afghanistan through a policy of the lesser of evils or something, which is the theory of why Russia would help out the Taliban. I think the Central Asian governments don't want any of them at all, of course. And I don't think they make that much of a distinction of the Taliban being a better option than the Islamic State. So these flirtations that are reported of, you know, between Russia and the Taliban have got to be very worrying to the people in Central Asia. Because this is Russia playing politics in their region, but the Central Asian governments have no control over this at all, and it's not going to help engender any kind of trust among those countries with the Kremlin.
Okay, thank you very much, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlag Owazi, for your time and thoughts. And big thanks goes to Dr. David Lewis, a lecturer at the UK's Exeter University's Political Science Department, and Dr. Stephen Blank, the senior Russia fellow at the American Foreign Policy, for joining the discussion today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.